really thank everybody that's involved in every aspect of patient care from top to bottom for dealing with all the COVID issues and headaches and problems. You know, I feel that everybody's really risen to the occasion. You know, we're putting our lives on the line every day that we go to work because it's a disease that you can catch and people can die from. So thanks to everybody from top to bottom that is participating in patient care in Orange County and California and the rest of the United States. We appreciate everything that you do. So with that, let's start the meeting. First, I'd like to have a motion to approve the minutes from July 10th, 2020. The only omission that I saw in the minutes is that my name is left off of the membership and attendance up at the top left of the minutes. So if you could just add that in, that would be great. I was at the meeting.
Mayor Culpa.
Pretty clear I was at the meeting for the minutes because it talks my name's over and over. Just don't see it. I've somehow dropped it out. So if there's no opposition, I reviewed these minutes and I would move that we approve them.
So moved.
Second.
Great. Next, we're going to start with all of our reports. So we'll start with the medical director report from Orange County Emergency Medical Services, Dr. Schultz.
Okay, we've got about five items, just sort of mostly informational. Excuse me. We have gone through our six-month review of policies and procedures and have now posted seven revisions and one new policy, and that just went up in the last day or so. A letter went out summarizing what the changes were. But most of it is minor stuff. The pediatric dosing, that is new. That's a fairly significant item, completely redesigned. It's much more pictorial. It's easier to use, and I think it's going to be a big improvement. Most of the rest of them are just more wordsmithing and trying to bring out a slightly better and more accurate statements, but nothing earth-shattering. So just want everybody to know that that's up and now posted. We had a process going on dealing with trying to get paramedics approved to vaccinate themselves for influenza, and that has actually gone through. The state has approved our proposal, our policy, and our training materials. So that has gone out to two departments right now, Huntington Beach and Anaheim, and they are in the process of training and will be having their own paramedics vaccinating each other against influenza. So that's moving forward and seems to be...
That's a really smart idea. I like that.
Yeah, they not all of the departments, I think, are necessarily going to do it, and that's fine. But it seemed that for certain departments it was an important thing that they wanted to do, and in this issue, this time where things are so screwed up, it's nice to try to be able to provide that opportunity for them if they so chose to do that.
Can I jump in on that, Carl?
Yeah?
Just to share that a lot of the other statewide LEMSAs have done the same thing, especially those areas that have county health systems. So they're using their county paramedics to vaccinate for flu, and then also in anticipation of the COVID vaccine that will be coming out, possibly using the paramedics to do that as well. So this is happening statewide.
And just as a thank you, Ms. McConnell, for bringing that up. The issue with the COVID vaccine will be revisited separately. I was a little bit anxious that if I tied the COVID with the influenza, there might be some more gnashing of teeth and more anxiety about it. And I wanted to separate them because I think the flu vaccine is fairly non-controversial. There is such a thing. And would probably be fairly easy to be implemented by the fire departments. When it comes to COVID, there may be some other feelings about that, and I didn't want to mix the two. So right now it's just the influenza, but if there is expressed interest by the fire departments for also vaccinating themselves against COVID, I am definitely open to pursuing that and writing whatever policies and procedures need to happen. So we'll wait and see how that goes.
Yeah, and from the fire chief's perspective, I know we brought it up at our last monthly meeting, and so we'll just continue to stand by as information becomes available on the COVID part of it, and then we'll bring it up at our next meeting to just the availability of the own fire departments and the vaccinations being available for just the flu, and just keep that on our radar as things change and evolve and more knowledge becomes available besides just Huntington Beach and Anaheim.
Moving along, just a quick note about Fairview. The Fairview alternate care site has had what they call a warm closure, which means that they are no longer receiving patients or caring for patients at this time, but they are not completely boarded up and gone home. They could conceivably be reactivated with 72 hours notice. They still have enough of their components available, medication, staff, what have you. So if something were to surface and we would need an alternate care site, that could be reactivated within 72 hours. But right now, it's not in business and all the patients have been dispositioned. Nothing new from Placentia's Fire and Life Safety Department. They've been in business now for a little over 2 months. And we haven't had any major medical issues. We're pretty satisfied with how things are going. So we'll continue to partner with them and make sure that there aren't any issues. But so far, it's been from the EMS side, it's been pretty clean. One other thing I wanted to bring up, just as an FYI, we've been talking about APOD times now for several years. And we have now amassed an inordinate amount of data to sort of help us make a decision about what the standard should be. So that I'm not prepared to make that today's meeting, to make a motion at today's meeting, but we will probably by the end of the year at least, be looking to identify a standard APOD time. There won't be any consequences for missing it. There's gonna be no disciplinary issues attached to it. But it's very difficult to even begin to have discussions about APOT times, that's redundant, APOTs, without having some measurement of what the acceptable standard is. So this would facilitate us at least having a more rational discussion, because right now people say, well, you know, somebody sat there for 45 minutes and legitimately the hospital could say, so what? There's no standard. And that's right, it's true. So it makes it kind of hard to say, well, that's too long. It's like, well, what's too long? So this at least would allow us to make that happen. So that would probably be coming at the next meeting, and we'll run it through all the other advisory groups as well.
And, I need to interrupt again. There are some people in the waiting room waiting to be let in. You're the host.
Yes. Oops. So sorry. Thank you very much.
I'm on the phone with Trees Gutierrez, and she's telling me she can't get in as well. She said her password didn't work.
Is she looking at the right invitation?
I don't know. She just hung up, so it may be that she's getting in now.
Everybody's forewarned. When Carl's the host, if you're not here, you're not. Door's locked. we'll make sure that he's not the host.
You know, this thing is a moving target. You click on these things, and before you can click on it, it moves. And so I'm still having some issues here trying to get everybody in.
We got a 12-year-old to help you, Carl.
Hey, you ought to try this sometimes. It's not as easy as it looks. Okay, I think I got everybody in now.
Okay.
All right. Do you have anything else with your medical director report?
Oh, that's it.
And then next on the agenda is the Orange County EMS report.
Is David available? David Johnson?
No.
Okay. Usually it's
our time is pretty much consumed with COVID, and pretty much the EMS report is going to be within the next few attachments as far as EMS core activities, but our COVID activities are still high. This division operates the healthcare agency operations center, which is the location, it's the distribution center for all medical supplies and equipment. I think as of this past week, we've sent out over 12 million units of PPE and medical equipment. It's been quite a feat. One of the things I can share is that we took to the board for consideration an allocation for hospitals under the CARES Act budget. The county was awarded several million dollars to use for CARES Act COVID expenditures and costs. The hospitals, as you know, took a huge hit in the beginning. Not just the hospitals, the whole EMS system did, in anticipation of the surges that were going to happen that nobody could have built into their budgets ahead of time. And just as an example, one of our largest hospitals was using pre-COVID 3,095 masks a month, and during the peak they were burning through 100,000 a month. So just massive supplies of that the hospitals hadn't anticipated. So in any event, the board, with our recommendation, approved an allocation of $30 million to be allocated to hospitals based on their licensed capacity and their COVID inpatient burden over a 10-day period at our peak in July. So that has gone through, and the hospitals may use that allocation for expenses that have occurred because of COVID going all the way back to March. We're also moving forward with an allocation for SNFs. Same idea, based on their, it's not based on COVID burden, it's based on their capacity. They'll be able to use that money to purchase extra supplies. So we're still very, very busy and plan to be so as we move into fall and winter. And that's pretty much it.
Thank you for that report. Next is the Health Emergency Management Report. Anything there?
No, it's COVID.
Okay. Next is Hospital Diversion Report and Ready Med Here Report. That's attachment number two.
That normally would be David Johnson's presentation, so he's not on the call. So I can try and summarize. Essentially, there hasn't been any radical changes that we've seen with the diversion reports. We typically see more diversion on Mondays, which makes sense because Monday is the busiest day in the emergency department throughout the week. And so it's not surprising to see that spike, and that has continued on through the last several months. But as the cases of COVID have slowed and the hospital census has dropped, there has been not a massive, but a significant decline in the overall diversion, and there's nothing really remarkable in the diversion report, at least for the last two or three months.
Thank you for that. Next is the Ambulance Patient Offload Times APON report, which is attachment number three.
That would also be probably David's, and so the summary on the APON times are that we have been fairly remarkably consistent over the last couple of months.
We do see spikes periodically with CT scan closings and whatnot, but overall the APOC times have been fairly consistent, averaging from the 90th percentile, averaging under 30 minutes, anywhere between 24 and 28 minutes depending on the month. So nothing really sinister there either.
How does that compare to other Southern California counties?
We're, I hate to say this because lightning's going to strike me, but we are the gold standard. There's just nobody that can touch our APOC times. So we're about as good as it gets. And that's, I think, a tribute to a lot of different actors moving forward. But yeah, a lot of places typically have APOC times in the 45 to hour range and even longer. So we're in good shape when it comes as if we compare ourselves to a jury of our peers.
Great. Well, thank you. Next on the agenda is the 911 emergency ambulance transport contract report for fiscal year 19-20, attachment number 4.
And that's me, Adrian Rodriguez. Good morning, everybody. Now we have the 2019-2020 annual report. It's posted on the Orange County EMS website at www.healthdisasteroc.org under the EMS ambulance performance section of the website. The contractors for regions A, B, C, D, and E operate within the response compliance of 90% for the 2019 to 2020 911 Orange County Ambulance Service contract. Now the new contract started on June 1st, 2020, and the response time compliance changed to 95%. The ambulance contractor's response time compliance has been 95% or better for the months of June and July, and we're still in the process of going through August. That's it.
Hey, can I ask just a quick informational question, Adrian? I noticed a lot of the, I think, care ambulances have a new name on them. Did they merge with another company or?
Care Ambulance was bought by Falk. The Care Ambulance was bought by Falk back in, I believe, 2010, 2011. Now they just, they're kind of putting their brand on the ambulances. It says Falk, and then it also says Care Ambulance on it.
Thank you for that update. Anything else, Adrian?
Not at this time.
Thanks. Next on the agenda is the EMCC correspondence, which is attachment number 5. You want to address that, Carl or Tammy? You're on mute.
Yeah. These are all the letters and things that get sent into the EMCC, and they're not agendized as individual items. There can be a fair number of them, so it would take us too long to do it that way. So we put them into one bucket and agendize that as an item, and then that leaves the members of the committee the option of going through them, and if there's anything that they want to bring up, they can. But it makes the meeting more tolerable if we don't require every meeting to go through all the different letters that we and documents that we get. So that's the process of creating this one agenda item that allows everybody to go through it, and then if there's nothing in it that interests them, then we don't have to spend a lot of time on it.
Great.
And this would be the ambulance ordinance?
No, these are letters related to the transition in Placentia from OCFA to Placentia Fire, life and fire safety. Sorry if I'm getting that wrong for Placentia. But these were letters sent to the OCFA board, final report on the Placentia transition to talk about how they transitioned from the other agency. and it was CC'd to the members of this committee. So that's what these letters are in regards to.
This is Luis from the city of Placentia. I can just offer a couple of comments. Good morning, everybody. We had just wanted to provide the OCFA board a final progress report on our final transition, share with them some statistics from the first quarter operating. We're really proud to say that the fire department and the Lynch team have really exceeded expectations. The data shows that we've been able to reduce.
Right to the printer.
We've been able to reduce response times by 50%. We've also been able to reduce a mutual aid into Placentia by over 80%. So the model works, and it works well. And it's a real testament to the team, in particular the Lynch team, who have worked really hard over the last year and a half getting themselves.
Well, and I got it to get the day,
Any other questions or comments on the EMCC correspondence? Thank you for that report, by the way, that update. If not, we'll move on next to the advisory subcommittee and advisory group reports. So first is the facilities committee.
Now, I can provide comments on all three of these if necessary. However, if there's an actual member from one of these advisory committees that's here, it'd be better if they were to provide this summary. But if there isn't, I can't do it. So I'm just going to sit tight for a minute and see if anybody from facilities is actually on the call.
I think so.
Okay, it doesn't seem so. Okay, so two items came up that of note in the facilities committee. First thing is that because of COVID, it has really scrambled our schedule from the EMS side of doing the periodic reviews of the emergency receiving centers, specialty centers, trauma centers, there isn't enough time, energy, availability by anybody to make this happen as scheduled. So what we've opted to do is to postpone designations for all of these entities. And then as the, in other words, extending their designations, whatever they are, for another year, while we try and get on top of this pandemic. And then once things settle down, we will reinitiate the process of renewing and reviewing designations. For the trauma centers, they've already been advised of this. The American College of Surgeons has opted to postpone their accreditation, their designation process for a year. And so the new dates will be coming out, and the individual trauma centers will be notified by ACS. We'll be sort of mimicking that as we get control of the pandemic and things begin to return to normal. We'll be reaching out to the various specialty centers and ERCs to work with them on reviewing and renewing their designations. But nothing's going to happen for the next 2 to 3 months. So if your designation was supposed to happen in the next 2 or 3 months, it's not. And we'll be working with you to try to reestablish a timeline that works for everybody. The other issue that came up is the security process for the hospital hub. This is a way that all the hospitals can upload data and access data. In the past, this process has been not ideally as secure as it could be, and given the advances in phishing and other activities that can threaten the integrity of an electronic database and an electronic medical system, we've enhanced the security features, and now that information has been pushed out to all the hospitals, and they're beginning to review and revamp how they accredit or credential, whatever the word would be, their users of the system, and learning what the new wrinkles are so they can continue to utilize it. So that's going forward. If Mr. Rapass is on the call here, maybe he can expand on that a little bit.
Hey, Carl, I'm on the call, and you said it just fine.
Okay. So that was the main things that came up at facilities.
Next is CPAC, County Paramedic Advisory Committee.
Okay, doesn't seem like anyone is there, so I'll provide that input. There were three issues that came up. First was the Placentia's Fire and Life Safety Department, and just sort of a review of their performance to date. There was no rockets or explosions. It was a pretty straightforward presentation with not a lot of questions or comments. We discussed COVID-19 and the impact that was having, and brought up some of the issues where we were working with the state and considering, at that time, we hadn't done it yet, but we're considering the vaccination program to enhance firefighter, paramedics, and the private paramedics being able to vaccinate each other. And the other thing that came up was trying to come up with a better process for dealing with abdominal aortic aneurysms, and that is a really difficult and complicated issue. But just wanted to make them aware that this was going on. We're trying to develop a better system than we have now, which is essentially no system. We did have a system a while ago that had to do with sending them all to trauma centers, but for lots of reasons that is not as effective as we had hoped, and we're investigating other options, and that is still a work in progress. And that's all for the Paramedic Advisory Committee.
And then next is the Transportation Advisory Committee.
Okay. Is there anyone here that could provide that report? Okay, then I will do that first. This is a small issue, but it's a necessary one. The chair of the Transportation Advisory Committee, which is Jim Karras, has expressed an interest to step down and would like to move on, and so we will need a replacement for Mr. Karras. Mr. Rob Vieira has graciously agreed to take that role if he were so nominated. And the way the process works, if you look at the bylaws, the current chair, which is Mr. Karras, has to sort of suggest to the medical director, me, who he thinks would do the job, and he suggested Rob Vieira. I then would make a formal nomination to you as the chair of the MCC that we officially appoint Rob Vieira to that position, and I am making that official request of the chair of the MCC now. And then you as the chair of the MCC would then appoint Mr. Rob Vieira as the new chair of the Transportation Advisory Committee. So it's a little convoluted, but that's what needs to happen, so it's in your court.
Any discussion from anybody on this? I don't think it's a controversial appointment. If I could just get a motion, a first and a second, and we'll do a quick vote.
So moved.
And second?
Any opposition? So the matter passes. So congratulations, and let's welcome Rob here to the Transportation Advisory Committee. Yeah, next on the agenda is...
The next thing was the meeting time for Transportation Advisory Committee. The problem we have encountered is because of the way the schedule is set up on the calendar for the month, when we have this meeting, the EMCC, it ends up getting data or information from the Transportation Advisory Committee that's stale. Typically, the Transportation Committee meets 2 to 3 months before the EMCC. And so when we present this information, either it's kind of outdated, or typically they haven't met and they're going to meet at the end of the month, so we don't have anything to present. So in trying to make their presentations and their information more relevant to this committee, we decided to move the committee meetings to the first Wednesday of the month, and that would begin January 6th. So this is sort of an information item. This came up at the Transportation Advisory Committee meeting and was approved. So going forward, the Transportation Advisory Committee will meet before the EMCC, so the recommendations and the discussions will be much more current and relevant to what you have. And this particular presentation is an example. We met 2 days ago, So this is fresh off the press. This just happened. So rather than letting you know 3 months from now, this is going on, you know, right away. So that's I think all I have regarding transport. Oh no, one other thing. We did discuss the ambulance ordinance. That information was provided to the committee, and they reviewed it and were if they so chose, we were going to be able to make comments to the OCMS going forward.
Great, thank you for that. Next on the agenda is unfinished business, which there is none, so we can move on to new business. So we have two informational items today. The first is disaster receiving centers.
Kevin, do you want me to do that? You want me to do that one?
Disaster resource centers.
Right.
Resource, sorry.
This has actually been a concept that's been in the works for a while, several years, and has sort of come to fruition, not in small part because of COVID, but we are trying to enhance substantially the capabilities of the county to respond to disasters. And we looked to model, in some respect, what LA County does. Now, granted, LA County is a different animal, but they're conceptual idea that we like is they also have disaster resource centers to help support the individual hospitals, and we would like to do a similar thing. The concept behind this is that we're going to start with the trauma centers because they are more established, they have more resources, and are sort of evenly distributed throughout the country, the county more or less, and so we're focusing on seeing if the trauma centers would be willing to take on this role of disaster resource centers, and they would then be able to support hospitals in their region if in case there's an event. We have a sort of a document that we've approved that sort of describes this, and I believe that was one of your attachments. So it's like 8 pages. Most of the stuff that's in there, these trauma centers actually do already. There will be some new things, but it's not overwhelmingly new. Most of it is actually activities they engage in already. And we'll be providing some additional supplies and then a framework going forward to have these centers network with their surrounding community hospitals to try and provide a more robust response to disasters. And we actually got a lot of assistance in writing this from Dr. Alma Sheikh, who used to be the trauma medical director at Mission, and we were fortunate to be able to hire her to work with people here at OCMS to develop this concept, and she's still involved with moving this forward.
Any questions or comments from the committee members on that?
I have one. This is Karen Sharp. Hi. So in this concept, I read through it very quickly, but I didn't catch all the verbiage. Would the current hospital cache of supplies that are at, I think, pretty much every hospital, would those go away and now be located at a disaster resource center? And how would they manage all that? That's a lot of supplies.
No, the plan is not to cannibalize the store that's already out there. These would be additional supplies to these disaster resource centers. Conceptually to not only be there for those hospitals, but also to share with their surrounding community hospitals that they are trying to reach out and support. But these would be additional, not in place of.
Okay, great, thank you.
And does this require a dedicated coordinator to have this status, or is it just managed by the existing personnel at the hospital?
The way we are trying to do this is to leverage the resources that already exist. Trauma centers have both a emergency management person, not related to the trauma center, just because they have one, and they also have a trauma, or a, what's the term for it?
Program manager.
Trauma program manager, thank you. So there are two individuals who could initially share this responsibility, and that's why one of the reasons why we thought that trauma centers would be a place to start, because they do have some additional personnel that could possibly take this on. And both of those individuals do a lot of this already. So it's not that we'd be adding a huge burden to what they do. but that we're trying to leverage what they do already. Would some additional support be nice? Yeah, sure. But the way that the policy is written up, or the description is written up, it does not require that. If they have both a trauma program manager and an emergency management person, that would be sufficient at the beginning.
Thank you for that update. Any other questions from the committee members?
Yeah, I think it's good to note too that for all of us, that that policy, that's on our on the website for the 50-day review period. So have until November too to keep taking a look at it and working through with your individual organizations.
Good point. Thank you. I forgot to mention that. I appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah, it's out for 50-day comments. So if there are some things that, that people would like to see in there that aren't in there or changed, please enter those comments in the comment box, and we will definitely look at those at the end of the 50-day comment period.
Dr. Schultz, can I add a comment too?
Sure.
Hi, good morning. This is Ted Sakiuchi. So I just wanted to point out something that you mentioned about trauma program managers taking the role and helping with it. I think initially it will be helpful. At the same time, we should look into other counties to see what they do, especially LA County, in terms of the utilization of the personnel for the coordinator. The reason I'm saying it because one of the criteria for ACS, and they actually are very strict about it, is lack of distraction for trauma program manager. They want them to be really focused on trauma. And disasters, especially now we have COVID in hands, a lot of them are not really trauma related. It might be considered, if it basically, we advance in it, it might be considered a little bit of a distraction for trauma program managers if they're really involved in it. And that's why we should look into to see if other candidates are successfully actually utilizing their trauma program managers, or they actually have an added FTE to manage as a coordinator.
Yes, this is Karen again. So our sister hospital in Long Beach Memorial is a trauma center, and they do have a specific employee who manages the disaster of that area. So it is a physical FTE for us at Memorial Care, but it would be difficult for a trauma program manager.
Right.
This is Mary Berkeley from Mission Hospital as well. And just to follow up with that, Dr. Schultz, you said that initially this would be a shared responsibility between the emergency manager and the program manager. Does that indicate that down the road you would be expecting there to be an additional FTE support?
We didn't want to create too tight a box around this and lay out too many requirements and expectations. We wanted to leave this as relatively flexible as possible, permitting the outcome, not so much the process. So yeah, if somebody felt that they had resources and wanted to bring on another 0.5 FTE to help with this, it's not prohibited by this. The problem is, as we all know, that oftentimes if hiring somebody is mandated, you lose your audience from the beginning. And so the rest of this, which is really attractive and I think has a lot to offer, gets lost in the debate over whether we can afford an FTE. So we did not want to make that a requirement. The way it's set up, and Dr. Shape, as a former trauma program medical director, is aware of all these issues. She knows what the trauma program managers do. So it was with that in mind that this was designed to try and not add huge amounts of distractions and other roles to that person, and try to leverage what they already do to make this work. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Dr. Schultz, if I could comment on that as well, I completely agree. You know, especially right now, what I would worry about is we may actually end up cannibalizing from some of the work, because we already have in the trauma programs ACS mandated positions
in things like injury prevention. We're under increased effort to have performance improvement criteria. I think if the emphasis on the function, and if the individual program thinks that to fulfill that function, they need a role, that I would advocate giving that flexibility to the centers rather than mandating the position. I know at least for CHOC, that would work better for us. And I would agree with that. I would support that.
Any other comments? So take a look at the whole policy. It's on the website. It's still out for public comment. If you have feedback, please give it to Tammy or Carl or anybody at OCMS. And this will probably be coming back at the next meeting for final approval.
There's a portal to enter your comments. Isn't there, Carl?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Great. So next in any business is the Orange County Ambulance Ordinance Update. I'm going to take that.
That should be me, Aiden Rodriguez.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to mute your microphone. Someone's got feedback that's coming up.
I think we got it. for Orange County Ambulance Ordinance Update, if you go to Attachment 7, at the first page of the attachment, there is an Ambulance Ordinance Amendment Process for 2020. The top part of that page has a bit of a brief history there of this process. I want to take you down, though, to the proposed Ambulance Ordinance detail, and more importantly, the highlight of it. Starting with section 4-9-1, intent and purpose. And it talks about, how the ordinance removes reference to unincorporated areas and establishes an ordinance which applies countywide. Then in 4-9-1, under intent and purpose also, the amendment removes the ability of the cities to add more services to vacancies. Actually, in the case of OCMS, OCMS is the regulator. Okay. Other highlighted area is 4-9-6 under investigations. You'll find the ordinance adds reference to EMS plans and gives OCMS the ability to see license application criteria based on EMS plan rather than ordinance. Another amendment area is the 4-9-7 under issuance of denial of ambulance services license. It talks about updating or updates hearing process as defined in civil county ordinance, and the license denial process ends with the hearing officer's decision. Other highlighted area is 4-9-9. And it talks about the suspension of or revocation of an ambulance service license. So in that area, it replaces the health officer with the medical director, updates that language, and revises the hearing process for licensure actions that end with a hearing officer decision, okay, rather than the medical director. And then the other one I want to go over is 4-9-8. Domestication and insurance provisions that updates language and specific requirements are described in state that are described as state regulation, OCMS acts and procedures rather than in the ordinance. Now, the amended ordinance is part of Attachment 7 and it's available for review. If anyone has comments, you can email me at A. Rodriguez, and that's A-R-O-D-R-I-G-U-E-Z at OCHCA.com. And we'll be taking comments until October 31st.
I just want to add a little bit more to this. The ambulance ordinance that we're amending is from 1985. When we had a population of 1 million in the county, half the South County half of, well, most of South County and all of the unincorporated areas were served by what was called the Orange County Fire Department. So there were a lot of, so when OCFA formed in 1995, that ordinance should have been amended at that time. Over the last 30 years, there have been work groups attempting to amend this ordinance. And we actually were on the final stretch back in 2014 because we had been directed by the Board of Supervisors to amend the ordinance and return, because if you all remember the whole situation with the state telling the county that the local EMS agency, OCMS, had to run the RFP for the county emergency ambulance areas, that we could no longer delegate that responsibility to OCFA. So one of the main drivers to changing this ordinance was that, and most cities mimic this ordinance in their own city municipal codes, you know, so rather than county, it'll say city. So there was a real big push back 6 years ago to get this changed, and for a variety of reasons it made it to the final stretch and then it was dropped. The reason why it was dropped, well, there was one real compelling issue that the ambulance association had that we've now just worked out, and that had to do with appeals related to licensure actions. So that has been resolved. And what this does is it now brings us current to what we're actually doing. So there's a lot of things that didn't change, and the things that changed, we had to change because the state, you know, no longer allowed us to delegate the responsibility of competitive process for our county operated areas. So it's mainly just writing the ordinance. And what this ordinance will do is that establishes the authority for us to then develop policy, aka regulation, on how to carry that out. So it really doesn't affect, it really has to do with licensing ambulances, permitting the ambulance vehicles, and establishing the EMT personnel standards that we require, that the state requires and also the county requires. It does not touch anything to do with the cities that have administrative rights over their own areas. They can do whatever they want. They don't have to follow this RFP competitive process. So we're pleased to finally get this down and present it to the board in December. But as Adrian said, if there's something in there that we missed or there's something awry, please send in your comments to Adrian, and we'll look at those.
This is Chief Roger with the Fire Chiefs. Thanks, Tammy and Adrian. Yeah, I know we took a look at, or tried to take a look at it when Eileen sent it out. So we do have some suggestions, and I, you know, we'll forward those to Adrian and then possibly talk to Dr. Schultz about them. Just as far as, I know there has been a lot of changes that you mentioned. And so with this not being changed for so long, and with so many, you know, changes that have occurred between the entities, we just would like to, you know, we have some suggestions for language to make everything just, I guess, streamlined and universal, because this does fall into a lot of the jurisdictions' ambulance ordinance that they have on file too, as referenceable. So we appreciate that opportunity to be able to do that.
Terry, just a quick question: the accreditation licensing standards for the individual ambulance operators does also apply towards those who work for public agencies. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And they all comply now. That isn't anything new.
Chief Losher, I'm just curious, are any of those changes things that would rise to the level of things that this committee would need to know about, or are they more housekeeping items?
Possibly. I think it's probably better just to have kind of talk that through with Dr. Schultz and see if it's something that needs to come back to this board here, this committee, to have some discussion on it before it would go to the board. So I think that conversation would probably be better and then brought to here if necessary.
Would the comments that have been provided, the public comments provided, can those be made available to the EACC or just in public in general?
Yes. And, you know, depending on what the comments are, we may or may not endorse them, but we will be going to the board in December, and this group doesn't meet again until January. EMCC doesn't have to approve this. This is a county ordinance, so we just wanted to offer an opportunity for for everybody to comment.
How often does the board meet? Do they meet monthly?
Oh, our board meets. They meet well every Tuesday, but pretty much there's at least one dark day. So.
I don't know the date for sure. The suggestion that if it is something that it needs to take a little bit of time, that if it's we'll still help. We still want to get it across the finish line as an outstanding issue that's, I know your office has been trying to get finished up, but I think it, if we don't meet it by that time period, like going to the next month after we meet in January, is a possibility.
Yeah, this is on the final stretch, and it's been reviewed by county council, so... If it's something that is controversial, we'll just have to find out and look at it and see what it is.
I agree. Sounds good.
I think the EMCC could probably meet for a very brief meeting just to discuss what those potential options are or changes.
Yeah, what we could do is, and we've done this in the past, is convene a special meeting. So I would ask Chief that if you could get your comments in, before October 30th, that way if I needed to convene an EMCC meeting, I could do so in November. And like I said, this isn't something that EMCC necessarily has to take an action on, but we could schedule a special meeting to discuss it.
Okay, that sounds good. You're on mute, Mike.
Mike, you're on mute.
Sorry about that. There's any other member comments? If not, we'll finish up the informational items and move on to individual member comments on any other topics, if anybody has anything. If nothing, next is the public forum. Do we have anybody from the public that wanted to address the committee? If no, then... we are wrapping this up. I wanted to give you the dates for next year for our meetings. Our next meeting will be Friday, January 15th at 9 a.m.
Hey, I apologize. I have myself on mute. I had a quick question for the team. In terms of the potential for utilizing medics on vaccinations. Is that something that this committee could discuss over the next, I guess, couple months and identify what a program like that would look like and the potential for that?
Do you want to take that, Dr. Schultz?
Yeah. Actually, this is a medical director sort of issue where we have to decide whether or not we want to apply to the state for what they call local option scope of practice. And we present our policies and our documentation and how it will work, et cetera, et cetera. And then the state looks at it and says either yay or nay. If they say yes, then we make that available to any fire department that wishes to do that. And we have done that already. So if Placentia wanted to do this, you just have to say, we want to do this. I will send you the stuff, and it's you do it.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. I didn't know it was that far along. I appreciate that. We'll reach out on that.
Sure.
Any other comments from any other members? So our next meeting is Friday, January 15th at 9 a.m. Maybe in person, but probably will be on Zoom. I doubt that there'll be mass vaccinations before then and elimination of this terrible disease. The dates for 2021, if you want to add them to your calendar now, are January 15th, April 9th, July 9th, and October 8th. And with that, we are officially adjourned. Thanks, everybody, for taking time out of your busy schedule to attend the meeting. Have a great weekend and be safe.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you.